national average high school graduation rate is 8 out of 10. A little bit more, but just about 8 out of 10. Out of those, 70% choose to go to university. So now you're down to about 6, right? Mm-hmm. And out of those 6, about half graduate.
This is the podcast of the Germanic American Institute.
Welcome. Willkommen.
Where Germanic-speaking European countries...
Germany.
Deutschland.
Austria.
Österreich.
Switzerland.
Schweiz.
Blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hallo. Hallo.
Servus.
Grüezi.
Grüezi.
We are here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey. Welcome to a special episode of the GAI podcast. This is one of those recordings where you want to listen very carefully and very closely. And I would actually almost suggest that you sit down and take notes, because this one is regarding the present, but also more importantly, the future. The future perhaps of your own professional career, but certainly the future of your kids and potentially their kids. What we're talking about today is the apprenticeship model, education in general, the differences between the US and Central Europe, where the apprenticeship model is strong, stronger than in the US. Time and again, we hear in the US that we have a shortage of labor forces. In Europe, we address this a little bit differently, but I'm not the one to 100% educatedly speak to that. So we have, once again, guests in the studio. We have Gina, the director of the GAI, who is also the force in the room when it comes to high school education. This is your background, so you know exactly what students want, what they need, and perhaps what they don't get. Mm-hmm. And we have Claudia from the other side of the coin, if you will, from the industry side, with an MBA, with significant experience in the private industry. And she's looking at it from the perspective of what our college graduates perhaps are not bringing to the workforce. I'm sitting somewhat in the middle. I'm teaching at a local college, but I'm also coming out of the private industry as former training and development manager. There are a lot of pain points. There are a lot of weaknesses in the system, and we'll address those. Gina, high school, I think this is where it starts. What are we missing?
So I'm a former high school teacher. I taught German for about 10 years. And I saw it time and time again. I had students in my class that were taking German who really had no interest in learning German. And granted, at high school, sometimes students aren't aware of really how valuable learning a new language can be later in life. But I had students that were bored and frustrated, and they did not want to be there. They were the kind of students who really would way rather be down in an engineering classroom setting where they're building something, they're creating, they're interested in manufacturing and engineering and design. And I like to share the Tyler story, who was a student I had in class, and he was kind of acting up one day, bored, just creating havoc. And I pulled him aside after class and I said, "Tyler, you know, why are you even taking this class?" And he said, "Well, I have to have 2 years of a language in order to go to college." And it was very apparent to me that he just really didn't want to take 2 years of a language. He was going to take the minimum possible. And also that he just really wasn't excited about going to college either. But that same student, we would always do a unit on the German education system when I was teaching German. And he was the one who piped up one day and said, when we talked about this dual education model, "Why don't we do something like that in the U.S.?" And I said to my class, I said, "How many of you would rather be now out learning a trade, learning a skill, you know, doing something practical versus being told you have to go on and go to university and study for a 4-year degree?" And I was amazed at the number of students who raised their hand.
I can see that perhaps the listening audience would say, "Well, wait a minute, individuals, students can go the apprenticeship route. So what is the dual education model that you're referring to?"
In Germany and Austria as well, and Switzerland, the apprenticeship or dual education model goes far beyond the building trades and very few positions here in the U.S. where apprenticeship is available. Coming from, growing up in Germany, and it's the same in Austria and Switzerland, apprenticeship means more than opportunity to work in the building trades or maybe some other few positions where these registered and structured apprenticeships are available. So apprenticeship and dual education is almost interchangeable in Europe. It actually is also available on the university level, where you go to university and you also do, you know, hands-on internships and practica in order to learn your job while you're also going to study. So speaking about that a little bit, here in the US, you know, most of the apprentice jobs are related to building trades, and people have an idea of hard hat, dirty, physical labor, and, you know, it often doesn't have the best reputation. In Central Europe in general, especially the German-speaking countries, there are about 350 different jobs or careers available for people in apprenticeships or that dual education, where anything ranging from administrative jobs to finance to banking to hospitality, travel, of course, also the traditional trades, like, you know, carpentry and electrician and those kinds of things. But the opportunity is much, much broader, and it allows people to have a hands-on experience while going to school. And the big difference is, in Europe, you are hired by the company as an apprentice. You get paid a little bit, you work in the company, and you go to school. So here, even, you know, is yet another difference to the apprentice model, where, you know, here, you might work with a union, or you might work, you know, but you go to a vocational school and only afterwards are you hired by a company. So that's really the big difference, right? As an apprentice in Germany, you are an employee from day one, and you get benefits and you get paid a little bit. But you also don't have to pay to go to school. Here, you know, the model, even within the apprenticeship, is a little bit different. So those are some of the things we're trying to address as the U.S. is facing not just a worker shortage, but a skills shortage.
For instance, the profession of a waiter, something that in the U.S. is almost, I'd say, not even regarded, but disregarded. It's a transitional job. It's a job that you just work for a couple of months, perhaps a couple of years, while you go to college, and then you move on, and the organization is looking for the next waiter. In Austria, this is a career. This is a job. It is paid with a living wage. And at the apprenticeship level, you actually start out with working at the restaurant for 4 days a week, and then the fifth day you spend 1 day at vocational school. So you still receive a well-rounded education, but it is certainly more geared towards the actual profession. The interesting thing behind this, though, is that you will oftentimes find individuals who start as an apprentice and then serve their entire career at the same restaurant, having their 5 weeks worth of guaranteed vacation. Plus, in Austria currently, it's about 20 national holidays. They do have the opportunity to look at retirement and say that, okay, I'm taken care of. I can actually really regard this as my career. So there's an entirely different social perspective taking place here, and social, I would say, acceptance of what an individual does. And I'm picking out the waiter because it is one of those very transitional jobs in the US, not so much in Europe. So next time when you make it over, stop at a coffee shop, one of those regarded coffee shops, for instance, Café Central in Vienna, that's the one that comes to mind. And you will find that the person that actually serves your coffee and perhaps your Sachertorte or something like that is probably in their mid-40s, perhaps a little bit older. And that's what they do. And it's rather interesting to see this stark contrast compared to the US, where this, again, once again, it's a transitional type of career here.
Yeah, right. It's that perception of an unskilled type job versus, like you said, waiters or even, you know, people in other positions. And I'm trying to think what other low skill retail. Same thing, right? In Germany, you can go and become Einzelhandelskaufmann or Kauffrau, which is a retail type apprenticeship where you learn, you know, customer service things and stuff like that. But you also learn how, you know, business functions and retail functions and those kinds of things. So yeah, a lot of the positions here in the US that are considered entry level or low level are actually also apprenticeships in Europe, which automatically upgrades the position, but it also upgrades, I think, the experience then maybe for the customers.
There's the whole range, as we've also talked about, from unskilled to highly skilled, very technical work. And in our research, we found that, you know, who's leading the world in this is Switzerland, where very high-tech, cutting-edge industries, over half their employees have gone the apprenticeship route. So it's not just an option for, you know, an unskilled or entry level or those who can't, quote, cut it in college. This is basically defining what your aptitude is, what your interest is, and we're going to train you and develop you because the workforce needs the whole spectrum.
Absolutely. It's not just a career option for those who can't or don't go to university. It is a career opportunity that gives you just as many options and choices as if you, you know, were to go to university. But like you said, that's maybe not something everybody wants to do and probably not something everybody should do because, you know, while we need people who go to university, we also need people who do an apprenticeship and do the other jobs.
Yeah, I just use the example. We need the civil engineers with their university degree, but you also need highly skilled people to build the bridges. And as for society to function, you have to have both.
It's certainly symbiotic. It's interesting, remembering about a week, 10 days ago, I talked with the owner of a plumbing and HVAC company. And the biggest issue that he's experiencing actually is finding skilled tradespeople because everybody's pushing towards college. And he's at the point where his apprentices get offered $20 to just being an apprentice. And they train on the job at $20 at full benefits from day one at vacation, which I don't know exactly how much vacation he's offering. But he's certainly offering something that's far and beyond anything that is offered through college, especially considering that the individual doing this particular apprenticeship does it debt-free, actually gets paid to do that. Whereas a typical college graduate, I think the average debt now is $37,000 for a bachelor's degree.
Yes.
In the Twin Cities, probably higher than that, actually, considering our annual tuition rates. Where's the intersection between actually a social disservice to the future professional and what we really need? Why are we so shackled? Why are we just so tied down to just doing the wrong thing?
Because we have, as a society, embraced what we're calling the college for all mentality. Mm-hmm. That there's this mindset that really the number one goal for every child should be to go on and earn a four-year degree at a college or university. And we are not saying that college and university doesn't have a place. Of course it does. Again, we need civil engineers and surgeons and those highly specialized academic skills and trades. But at what cost? And so this trickle down, this mentality has trickled down to very young kids. Even before they even start school, there is the mindset. As a parent, I know, I've seen it, I've lived it, that your number one goal for your child should be to go on to college and you need to start planning now. And so it starts when they're born, it starts at preschool, and you can trace it all the way up into high school where it kicks in so strongly with now this whole curriculum that's been developed about these are the classes that you take, here are the scores you need to get in order to get this coveted college acceptance letter. And that is the number one goal. And anything less than that is stigmatized. No one's out there celebrating the kids in college who are like, I'm going to go on and get my two-year technical degree, college degree, or I'm going to go do an apprenticeship to become a baker or whatnot. It's all this, and I have to say a big part of it is related back to ego. And as a parent, I can testify that as well. Everybody wants bragging rights about how many colleges their kid got into, what colleges they got into. We can watch the news about what's going on right now, the push and what extreme measures parents will take. But even outside of that, a whole industry now has sprung up related to college readiness. You know, tutoring industries and math supplemental help. And there's a whole alphabet soup of ACT,
SAT,
prep, GPA, LSATs, all of it. And it's overwhelming. I have a son who's 8 years old and I'm already starting to feel overwhelmed by it.
Yeah. And back to your point with the business owner, you know, who has the HVAC and plumbing. And it's fantastic that he's taking on training his apprentices. What would be even better is if he said, you know what, you work here 3 days a week, 2 days a week, you're going to go to one of the local technical colleges and you're going to get your certificate in HVAC and plumbing, right? Because that really is the combination. That's the dual education, on-the-job learning plus an apprenticeship type model where you get maybe an associate's degree or a certificate that person then afterwards can take. And the employer covers the cost of the education.
That's might be doing that. I'm not exactly sure. So that may right. very well be an option.
But that's really what we mean when we talk about dual education. It's mm-hmm. on-the-job training. And it goes beyond that, you know, what we're going to show you for the next 2 weeks what your job is, and then you're off on your own. But an ongoing, progressively structured teaching model combined with vocational school training. And again, those vocational schools and those community colleges or junior colleges, or call them, you know, they go by many, many different names, you know, are there to do that. But, you know, it really only works well if it is combined with practical experience. Otherwise, you're again have somebody who has this associate's degree or the certificate and no job to take it to. So that dual component is really the important part, where you become an employee, your employer invests in your education and in your ongoing growth and success.
The thing that stands out to me is the term investment. The investment in the individual and this is probably barking up the wrong tree now, but I'm going to try anyway. The case in point to this would be that the big two, actually, Apple and Google, from a hiring perspective, they have started to look at people actually without degrees, because they believe that this learning on the job, knowing how to code, might be really more beneficial by having produced something as opposed to having produced in theory through college and then showing up with a college degree. Now, again, this is not a generalized statement. This is just something that is in the news now lately, that Google and Apple are sidestepping sort of the traditional degrees, if you will. I think the fix in itself starts culturally. It starts socially and it starts at home. And I think this is where it gets really difficult and tricky, because it starts with the individual.
Right. You know, I've had to challenge myself. You know, I'm a teacher. I'm a product of the university system. I loved my 4 years of college at a major university. And so for me to challenge myself and say, you know, ultimately, what do I want for my child? Right. I want him to have a successful career and be doing something that he enjoys and feels satisfaction. And I have to be okay with maybe that is not the college pathway.
Are you okay with it?
I am. I'm beginning to become more okay with it. And you know, it's strange, because when we talk to people about it, or we talk to other educators who are out with this message, there can be a lot of times the response of parents will say, yeah, this apprenticeship, this is really great. And I think that's, we need to develop those. But in the back of their mind is, yeah, but not for my kid. And until we get rid of that, it's great for all these other kids, but my kid, he's still going to college. That's the biggest hurdle. And so I've challenged myself to say, I'm not going to be one who's saying it's good for all other kids, but not mine.
And the hard part is, right here in the U.S., as what we were saying, you don't have that other path as an option, right? And I moved to the U.S. in my early 20s. So I was faced with a decision, what do I do when I get here? In all honesty, in Germany, I would have done some type of an apprenticeship, probably in public service, because that's where my dad worked and that's where my sister works. And, you know, and you can do public service apprenticeships in Germany that are fairly high level and, you know, probably come close to a university degree, but they're not. When I moved to the United States, I just kind of started working, because that's what you do here. And I didn't then have the option to do the apprenticeship or any kind of dual education. So again, yes, I'm a product ultimately of the U.S. with getting an undergraduate and a graduate degree. However, that was the only option available to me if I wanted to do something, right? had I stayed in Germany, I was on the path of doing an apprenticeship in, you know, in the public service sector that would have given me a, you know, good opportunity for a career and job. So, you know, it's kind of, we have to make sure we position it in the way in which it is intended. As we keep saying, there's certainly a place for university and for advanced degrees. It's just the other options, the other opportunities, the other careers should be available as well. So it's more of an and conversation versus a let's get rid of the one completely and you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater. No, we're just saying university is great, and there needs to be a certain number of young people who do go to the university. But what happens to the rest, and what options and careers are available for them?
And I would just add to that, so as we've done the research, if you have 10 kids who start kindergarten at the same time, only a third of them will ever actually make it all the way through the system and graduate with a college degree. Even though we've been selling that that's the goal of all of you from day one. So what happens to the other two-thirds of the kids for whom they dropped out along the way or taken a different path? And what we're also advocating as part of our project is that there just needs to be more counseling. There needs to be more options presented to young people starting in middle school and high school. They need to know there are apprenticeships. There are, you know, the whole array of occupational opportunities that are out there, and kids just aren't learning about those.
There is a pretty significant number of individuals who set out on a path and then just don't walk to the destination, which in itself, considering the amount of debt that's loaded in between, with an educational system that is, even though many institutions, and I'm probably going to burn my fingers with that, but that's quite okay, I would say, with many institutions calling themselves nonprofit, they are still oriented upon the fact that it is an enterprise, it needs to generate money, and that's certainly justified to some extent, until we have at some point left the idea of education to where a student is no longer actually a student, but a consumer. And when I look at the campuses around the country, buildings are getting more and more, let's say, grandiose, if you will. There are coffee shops in the buildings. There are bowling alleys and swimming pools, and certainly athletics plays a large part. But it really seems to be all set out now to wow the consumer, which is the student who comes to the campus tour and is absolutely just floored by the amenities. And this is where I want to spend my money, and this is really what it comes down to. This is where I want to spend my money, because at the end of the day, it's no longer the student, it is the consumer that makes a decision. So I think somewhere along the way, we have surely failed to continue our mission of education as such. So the question is, how do we fix this?
Well, you do what we're doing, which is, number one, we have to start the conversation and say the status quo is not working. It's not working for young people because, again, two-thirds of them are not achieving the degree that's what they're supposed to be seeking. And now how much debt are they saddled with on top of that? And it's in failing employers as well. And that's the flip side is, you know, as you mentioned with your friend who's the plumber, about they mm-hmm. cannot find good workers. And it's not just in the plumbing industry. We are seeing it across so many sectors. And there's a crisis. We are on the, you know, especially as the baby boomers get ready to retire. The statistics alone for what's projected to happen in Minnesota about the shortage of skilled workers is we are reaching a crisis. You know, we're seeing the tip of the iceberg right now. And I think part of the solution too is to educate employers about the apprenticeship model, this apprenticeship system. And we're going to circle back to that word investment, about why it pays for you to invest in a young person, in an employee. And that's a pretty different concept for our American system, to think that you're going to ask an employer, because of course their first question is why? Why would I want to pay for somebody's education and training when they're just going to leave as soon as we're done?
Right.
And so then we can have the statistics that show really what the retention rate is. When you've invested in this employee, in this apprentice, how you have a worker who's going to stay with you and develop with you and show loyalty. And that's the flip side of what we'll be presenting is yes, it's a win-win-win, right? For the employee, for the employer, as well as for society, about this different model.
Since you mentioned presenting, we need to plug what we're actually presenting. It's the GEI Symposium, the Modern Apprenticeship, the other four-year degree that actually takes place April 12th, 2019, here at the Germanic American Institute on Summit in St. Paul. You definitely want to make note of that, and if you can, of course, attend. What time in the evening?
6 to 9 p.m., and we will have speakers representing all the different what are called stakeholders, right? So we will have people speaking about the current education system. We have actually invited people from the White Bear Lake District, so White Bear Lake Schools, together with the White Bear Area Chamber of Commerce, is really starting a grassroots type movement where school kids are paired with industry through the chamber to explore options other than college. The White Bear Lake School District has a person who is a career pathway navigator, and that person's job is to go beyond the shoving every kid into a four-year college to actually say, okay, what other career options are out there? Other speakers include people from the state of Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. They actually have registered apprenticeship program, and then a program that's called Pipeline, which matches companies, or which helps companies set up apprenticeship programs, and there are certain focus areas. And then we also have somebody from the German American Chamber of Commerce in Chicago presenting the ICAT program. And the ICAT program is something that is modeled on the German apprenticeship system, and it's been expanding here in the Midwest. So we're giving every stakeholder an opportunity to kind of talk and present things from their perspective, and people who come to the symposium will learn what opportunities there are beyond that four-year university degree. And just real quick, one other thing when we're talking about the money part, I don't know how many people know that a student debt is now the second highest debt in the U.S. after mortgages. So it has surpassed credit card debt and auto loan debt. So the highest amount of debt is mortgages, second is student loans, and then followed by credit cards and automotive. And that's not just the students, right? It's the parents and grandparents who carry a lot of that debt as well. So it's a debt crisis for everybody.
Let me fill in some numbers to this. 2017, student loan debt actually has soared from $260 billion in 2004 to $1.4 trillion in 2017. And I think it's at $1.7 trillion presently. Yeah. The average debt for a student jumped from $18,650 to $38,000 over the same time period. Again, we're talking a period of 13 years, which essentially is a drop in the bucket. And that, I think, once again underlines the importance of looking at other options. And this is, I think we also need to, one more time, underline, highlight, a couple of exclamation points to this, that this is not the all-out war on the college degree, not by any means. It's just really to look at what are the options, because at the end of the day, I think we all, not just ourselves, but certainly our children, that there are options, and what are those options like? And the system, the way it's set up right now in the U.S., perhaps robs some of those options that should be available. And I think this is what we're setting out to do, is to at least initiate the conversation with educated individuals who have something to say to this particular subject. They truly are invested in making those opportunities available. And to tie this back to Europe, I think makes particular sense, because we have run this apprenticeship model for hundreds of years. This is not news. This has been standing the test of time.
Yeah, and people kind of just get an aha moment when I say, where do you think the expression journeyman comes from? That actually ties back to the old apprenticeship, where you started working for a master carpenter, for example, and then you had to journey to other places and learn from other master carpenters. So part of the learning process back in the Middle Ages was a carpenter, for example, had to travel, I think it was further than 50 kilometers beyond his initial area where he learned. So he, and most of the time, obviously, were men, learned from another master carpenter, and they journeyed from town to town. And that title journeyman was born in that aspect. So it's something that's interesting that was, you know, transitioned to the U.S. system, but it truly started by people back in the Middle Ages traveling from town to town to town to learn from master craftsmen.
The proof too is that the model is working. It's just let's look at Germany, right? It has the third strongest economy in the world. It's the size of one U.S. state geographically, yet has the third strongest economy in the world. Gee, I wonder if there's a link between the investment in your workforce and your strong economy. Germany is also known to have an incredibly skilled workforce. And guess what? We all like these products that are made in Germany because then you know it's quality. So I think all of it points back to this model of investing in education and investing in skills training. You can reap the rewards from it. We see that in Germany and Switzerland and Austria.
And in addition, Germany also has one of the lowest youth unemployment rates in the world. Mm. So that ties into it as well, that, you know, you have an opportunity for youth to be employed and learn a trade or a skill or a profession. And as Gina said, you know, it kind of all adds up to a strong economy, high quality, high skilled workforce. It's, you know, there's a recipe for that.
But the question then in the end from a social perspective becomes, what has to happen for this to change?
Grassroots, right? It kind of has to start grassroots, whether it's, you know, groups like what I mentioned with White Bear Area, where you start changing the perspective that students in the school system have about what their career options are. Maybe in the schools, instead of just having career counselors. And by the way, Gina looked up those numbers. What is the ratio student to counselor?
In Minnesota? Minnesota is one of the worst in the country.
It's like 1 to 750.
1 to 753 or something
like that. Yes. Yeah. So one high school counselor to 753 students.
That's really bad math.
Yes. Exactly. Yes, exactly.
I'm just envisioning as an instructor standing in front of an audience of 753 wanting to be effective.
You can't.
It's impossible.
Right. So sadly, that then perpetuates the way that counseling is done. It's where it says, here, pick up one of these college brochures. And like you said, now colleges or universities are recruiting kids based on, oh, look, we built a new pool. We built a new this, right? The academics or what the specific aptitude is, right? As you said earlier, and Gina mentioned too, right? The student goes by the wayside. It becomes a business. It becomes a numbers game.
A revenue center.
And it becomes a numbers game where it says, now, you know, this high school, you know, graduates 2,000 students, you know, some of these big high schools, and gosh darn it, 1,500 of them went to a great university. It really just becomes a numbers game.
Yeah, and nobody's out there saying the number that 1/3 of all students drop out of college after their first year.
Right.
1/3.
33%.
Yes.
Yep. And so as we mentioned earlier, about 80%, the national average high school graduation rate is 8 out of 10. A little bit more, but just about 8 out of 10. Out of those, 70% choose to go to university. So now you're down to about 6, right? Mm-hmm. And out of those 6, about half graduate. So that's how you kind of whittle it down,
right,
from 10 kids down to 8 kids down to 6 kids.
Where does the rest go?
That's the thing is we're not saying the ones who didn't just completely drop out with no option. Some make a very wise decision and say the military, you know, that's a great option. And the military's built-in apprenticeship when you think about it, talk about on-the-job training. Yeah. So some students do make that decision to go to military. Some of them will choose an option such as
a
vocational school. But, mm-hmm, you know, it really comes down to what's the stigma, right? And as a parent, if you say, well, my it's getting better, but if you said my child's going into the army or my child's going to go to this career and this technical college and learn cabinet making, kind of the reaction from other parents is, well, where did your kid go wrong? Right. Mm-hmm. So I think really one of the biggest hurdles is changing the mindset, this stigma against you've chosen a path other than the 4-year degree. And the flip side is going to happen is what we're going to see is those young people who went and did an apprenticeship and graduate, and now they've got a degree and no debt and they're earning good income. Now, who was the smart one 10 years out?
Oh, no doubt about
exactly.
it. Absolutely,
yeah.
No doubt about it. It's the aforementioned numbers,
yes.
38,000 on average, which actually I believe to be a lower number, even though it's an average number. But when I look at just the tuition here in the Twin Cities outside of the U, this is getting prohibitively expensive with what the intended outcome is, unless you're in engineering, so basically a typical STEM graduate with science, technology, engineering, or math.
So when we post a position and people are applying for jobs, I'll just lay it out here and disclose. Yes, I look at their resumes and their skills. I briefly glance at their education and what sometimes their GPA is, but really what I'm drilling down is, what's your work experience? What have you done? And I will look at somebody who has worked in retail or worked in the food service industry, and that to me is a way bigger plus than how high your GPA was. Because if you showed me you worked for 3 or 4 years at a Caribou Coffee or at
as a server or something,
that shows me A, you can do physical work that's going to be required for the job. You've learned to multitask. You've learned to problem solve. You've learned valuable customer service skills, and you know, I think there's probably a lot of employers like me that are thinking that. We're just not confessing it. And so I'm going to confess it and say, to me, you know, I'm looking for both. Yes, I want you to be able to show that you can critically think and that you've learned how to learn. But I also want to see you've got some sort of practical experience in working with people and problem solving and multitasking.
And that goes back to what you mentioned earlier with Apple and Google right now looking for experience and aptitudes versus that piece of paper.
Yep.
Are we seeing a change in the marketplace?
Not
yet. In the hiring marketplace?
I don't think so. I think employers aren't hurting enough just yet.
You know, I do see some small changes, and then when positions are posted, it's not just the requirements of BA or BS, but now they're starting to see maybe or applicable experience.
Or equivalent.
Like nodding to the fact that you might have something gained through your experience that's just as valuable as the degree.
But yeah, I mean, I've been to a few presentations or talks from like the state of Minnesota, and the state of Minnesota has population count scientist people. I forget what the population studies, and it's predicted that here in the next few years, there's going to be a severe shortage, not just of people, but of skilled labor, like in the hundreds of thousands, just in the state of Minnesota. And I've also been to meetings with employers, and they're just saying, well, you know, right now we just kind of steal people from each other. But nobody's really, you know, it's like, you know, if we're a manufacturing industry, and for example, here in the Twin Cities, the medical device industry is fairly big. So you see employees just moving from one to the next, to the next, to the next. So for now, the pool is still maybe enough, as long as they kind of just do the big shuffle and steal from each other. But sooner or later, that's going to end. And there's really only so many workers you can import here to the Twin Cities, because some people are just never going to move here because it's cold and other things. So from some of the meetings I've been to, it just seems like some of the bigger employers that still have a pull, like a 3M or Medtronic, right, because people want to work there, they're not hurting just yet. And we'll see how that kind of develops over the next few years while there are shortages, and how these employers have to step up to find the skilled, not just the skills, but flat out the people that they need. And that's kind of how some of this whole thing got started, how we got involved. Yeah, so that's a little bit of the backstory, how some of this actually started here in the U.S., this whole skills initiative, it's actually called. Some of the large German auto manufacturers, like BMW in South Carolina and Daimler in Alabama, built these huge plants and realized that they didn't have the necessary skilled workers that they're used to having in Germany at their plants. And they imported some of their skilled workers from Germany until they started saying, well, this is silly. We have plenty of people here in the US, but how do we train them? So obviously, as a BMW or as a Mercedes or Daimler, you're large enough to go to the local vocational school or community college and say, hey, we want to set up an apprenticeship program. And
you bring up an interesting point here. When you look at, for instance, some of the countries, different countries' immigration websites, the skilled shortage workers who usually get almost an invitation to come into the country and get the work permits almost immediately, it's almost exclusively either IT or labor.
Right.
Manufacturing.
Yeah, right. Manufacturing.
Yep. And exactly. So that's kind of how this whole thing started and how we as the GEI got involved, because there's a white paper that was commissioned by the German embassy in 2012 or 2013 that kicks off this whole skills initiative, where it says, look, you know, there are lessons to be learned here in the U.S. There are things that can be done that are based on that German model and kind of tie back to the experience that some of these large auto manufacturers had when they moved here to the U.S. So it's something that can be done because they have been doing it successfully. But granted, you know, not everybody has the horsepower and like a BMW or Mercedes has, you know, with thousands of people in one location and, you know, really strong German roots. But that doesn't mean that bits and pieces from the German model can't be, you know, taken and adapted to make it work within a different environment.
And I would add that that's where this ICAT comes into play. So ICAT stands for the Industry Consortium for Advanced Technical Training. So it's a program, that an initiative from the German-American Chamber of Commerce in Chicago, where they will come and they will develop a cluster work in the geographical area where there's a cluster of industries that have the same sort of workforce needs, the skills needs, and they will develop an apprenticeship. So you might have four or five different companies working together to sponsor a group of apprentices to do the on-the-job skills training, but then also working with a community college for the classroom part that leads to a 2 or 3 year credential degree. So ICAT developed out of this realization that not every company is going to be big enough to develop an apprenticeship on your own. But if we all work together and invest together in young people, then we're all going to get the workers that we need.
Right. And they're, you know, jobs like toolmakers or, you know, mechatronic people or, you know, CNC. I mean, there's a lot of skills within a company that are comparable no matter what manufacturing sector you're in, you know, because pieces of equipment break. You need, you know, people who can troubleshoot. You can people who can fix them. And then that, again, is the similar approach to what the Department of Labor and Industry here in Minnesota says, you know, yes, there are some highlight areas that they're focusing on, and they're actually also working with employers to set up these things. So there is this realization, it's starting to happen,
right,
that we can't continue as we have, and that we need to have a different model because of this large amount of people retiring that had skills and that had experience, whichever way they achieved them. And now we're faced with this gaping hole of not just number of people, but also the skills that come along with them.
Two questions that I have left. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest hurdle in actually getting the attention, in getting people to pay attention to this? Because I would say from a profiteering perspective, there's really not much in it for the GEI itself. So this must be a labor of love.
This is 100% mission. Labor of love, yes.
What's the biggest challenge in this labor of love?
I would say it can just seem like a Herculean task to try to change the entire educational system. You know, where do you start? Everything from how is post-secondary education funding allocated? Do we need to be building more universities and colleges, or do we need more trade schools and developing apprenticeships? And the thought of, you know, with some of our projects here at the GAI, we work with MDE, and we know how hard it is to change because its regulation has to change, its mindsets have to change, but it can feel overwhelming, really, to changing the entire educational system. But that's what needs to happen. And we're not saying that we need to import the German model. We are aware that it's not perfect and it has shortcomings as well, but we don't have to start from scratch. There's a model that's out there that we can learn from and adapt to make it work in the United States.
I think adaptation is the big word here in terms of picking and choosing the things that work and then molding and essentially crafting them to be the American version of whatever the final outcome will be, but nonetheless, at least start somewhere as opposed to continuing the path that inevitably is going to lead to us running headfirst into the wall.
You know, speaking as the one American here in the group, I know to us, the concept of somebody at 16 being sort of done with their... even in the German model, there's Schulpflicht till age 18, right? You are required to be educated up until age 18. But at age 16, you can be done with going to your, you know, everyday schooling and start on this path of actually working and learning at the same time. And that feels so foreign and bizarre to most Americans. I think of a 16-year-old out there who's only, quote, going to class 3 days a week, and they're there 2 days of work. They're in a company and they're learning a trade. But it works. And so we have to think so differently about how are we really going to best serve young people? We're all saying the youth are our future. We want what's best for our kids and youth. And that means being okay with thinking of something completely different as far as what happens starting in as young as age 15 or 16.
Yeah, education doesn't cease. It doesn't stop. It's just a different version
it's
of education that we are
version.
Not used to.
Exactly.
Right. And then, you know, the other part, what I think that big challenge or that hill to overcome is who's going to connect all the dots, right? And that's kind of what we've been doing is because there are great, because we've kind of started peeling back the onion and we found there are pockets of really great initiatives that are going on, right? Like this whole White Bear area experience, and they're doing some great work. And then ICAT does some great work. And then the state of Minnesota does some great work. And then there are some other nonprofits that do some great work. And some of the local community and vocational and technical colleges are doing some great work. Well, who's going to connect all the dots? Because everybody's kind of in their own little world, right? And that's what we talk about, like with the stakeholders, right? The Minnesota Department of Education is looking at things, and then the state is looking at things, and industry is going, oh, we don't have enough workers, right? So everybody on their own is kind of coming to the realization that something needs to change, but... You know, here's little GAI. We're like, okay, we'll be in the middle. We'll sling it all together. You know, but that's kind of where, you know, we're starting little, and that's what these symposiums are for, and that's us, you know, connecting with some of these stakeholders,
right? Or at least starting the conversation,
right? If that's what we can accomplish, that we start a conversation with the right people to get them together in a room or to get people connected or at least to be a place where people can come for information to connect with the resources and the support that they need, then we've done our job.
The symposium on the 12th, tickets on the website, just free attendance. Show on up.
And I will add that one of our sponsors is Paulaner Beer, because the beer industry in Germany is a very big advocate of the apprenticeship model. So people who do show up to the symposium will be rewarded with a complimentary beer or two. So yes, we are going to bribe you to come to this event.
Right.
Well, that's a pretty good bribe. I think we can safely say that change is going to come. The question is whether we actively participate in the change or if the change is just going to overrun us and we're going to be caught pretty much pants down, which is about the worst situation to be in. So in order to address this on the, perhaps not even forefront anymore, but sort of in the on-ramp of this change taking place, I think this modern apprenticeship, the other four-year degree symposium really makes sense to at least attend and educate yourself about the potential options and how we can craft the future narrative of what the U.S. actually looks like.
And right. Just one final plug, if you can't come to the symposium at Deutsche Tage this year, where our theme is Das Moderne Deutschland, we are actually sponsoring an apprenticeship pavilion. So people can come to the tent and pavilion, learn about companies, local companies that are offering apprenticeships, learn about what the state is doing, just learn about ICAT. So just anybody from the public or parents or say, where do I even start to find information? I want to know what options are for my kid. I would encourage you to come to Deutsche Tage, second weekend in June.
And Oktoberfest. And
yes.
So check out our website. We're going to be putting more and more information about that on there. If you're just interested in general in this topic, check out our website. We do have links to other resources and information on there. So yeah, this is something that we will continue to work on. This isn't a one and done type thing. We had a symposium last year. We've been working on this. We're having that symposium again on April 12th here at the GAI, 6 to 9 p.m. and future events.
Well, Gina, thank you.
My pleasure.
Claudia, thank you as always. This was a special episode for sure. So certainly, once again, the plug, Modern Apprenticeship, the symposium here at the GAI on Summit in St. Paul, April 12th. Doors open at 6. Paulana is sponsoring the event. So this is information plus beer. This is almost the perfect case scenario. If you would like to have a second beer, maybe you can talk the person in charge into pouring you another one, but no promises on that. Again, 6 o'clock, the doors open, April 12th, put it on your calendar. Nobody says that you have to do certain things, but it's certainly very wise to load yourself with options and information about what the potential future can and likely will look like. That's it for special episode. We will return one more time this month with another episode regarding Germany, Central Germany, sort of the Rhineland, if you will. Stay tuned for that. We actually have one of our instructors joining us in our makeshift podcast studio at the GAI. Until then, Michael signing off. We'll talk soon. Bye.